Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a bunch. We appreciate it. Have you rated the show yet? How dare you? If you think we've earned 5 stars, we would appreciate it. We are fighting the algorithm battle. I don't personally care all that much about the rating system, but I know it matters to the computer, so we're going to play that game. If you think we've earned it, we appreciate it. Macroaggressions.io is the best place to connect with me if you want to find out anything about the books or the podcasts or whatever we're doing. Hey, get yourself in the right frame of mind to start thinking about what you're going to be doing in February, because Anarchapulco is coming, and I'll be back again, Anarchapulco 2025 in lovely Acapulco, Mexico, the tail end of February. So why don't you guys get down there? You can go to anarchapulco.com and use the discount code MACRO to save yourself some money on tickets and whatnot, but it is the 17th through the 21st in Acapulco, Mexico. I'll be down there. I'll be the host and MC again this year. I'm not even positive who the lineup is. They've kept it private, even from me, so I'm excited to see it once it comes out, but take a look and see what you think. Also, hey, huge thank you to our sponsors. I mean this sincerely. They make this show happen, and I think that if you're going to buy items out there, you might as well shop with like-minded people that own stores or businesses that are selling products that actually work, and they do things that you might actually be interested in them doing. Go to davidwolf.com. That's Wolf with an E on the end, davidwolf.com, and take a look and see what David Avocado Wolf has got going on over there at his store. There are all kinds of things. If you want to join his inner circle membership, you can do that. There's a ton of free resources over there. If you're somebody that is struggling with your health, or you're just looking to take your health to the next level, DavidWolf.com is a good place to start. See what you think over there. If you find something that you like in your shopping cart, the discount code on your way out the door is MACRO. And also, a huge thanks to Brain Supreme. I'll tell you, man, I love mushrooms in general. So I'm not exactly biased in this, but this mushroom blend that they've put together, it's not just psilocybin, of course. If I thought, you know, you're not going to be reaching into parallel dimensions with this, but if you want to have a fantastic workout, oh my God, get the athlete formula. 100%. Go to brainsupreme.co, not .com, brainsupreme.co, and take a look at what they're doing over there. Genius formula, athlete formula, feel good, the black stack, right? You got four choices over there. It's pretty simple. They're not going to get too carried away with you. I've got the genius and I've got the athlete. I love the athlete. I'm saving the genius. I'm saving it for when I'm riding. I'm sure it'll be a different trip, but I am on board 100%. These are fantastic. I took it this morning before I went to the gym. It honestly, truly works. The only way you'll know is if you try. So if you're interested, if there's something that looks right to you, go to the website and read about it. See what you think, read about what's in it, what isn't in it. And if it is something that's right for you, then the discount code is MACRO on your way out the door. It'll save you some money and helps to fund this show. We appreciate it. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get into the good stuff, right? Oh my God. And by good stuff, I mean the most frustrating thing in the world is that here we are, 2024, and we're still having to have a conversation with people about communism. Well, real communism hasn't been tried yet. Yeah, it has. It ends with piles of bodies. It always ends the same way. There's no misunderstanding. You didn't hang a left when you were supposed to make a right. It's the equation is leads to all roads lead to murder in the end. But, you know, every generation needs to kind of figure this out themselves. They see people wearing Che Guevara shirts and they think that this is interesting. These are people that are fighting against the man. They're fighting against the power structure. They're fighting against the establishment. Oh, yeah, if only, right? They're only fighting against it because they seek to install their own version of it, which is just a different flavor of tyranny. They're not coming to free you from the shackles of government. They're here to impose the worst form of government you've ever seen in your life. Of course, under the guise of getting back at the man who's been harming you and keeping you down your entire life. So if we could only get rid of the man, then all of our problems would magically disappear. And what it occurred to me was that I don't think most people have ever really dug into the Communist Manifesto before. And I'm not even saying, like, sit down and read the whole thing. Just listen to this episode. Well, this will be like the Cliff Notes version of it. I'm going to get into the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. And I assure you, they're crazy, right? They're ideas that were bad 200 years ago, and they're even worse today. But doesn't matter. We're going to go through them all. I want to talk a little bit about who Karl Marx was and Friedrich Engels. And what they were working on, when they were writing it, what their plan was, and then how it sort of factors into where we are now, where you have Democratic Socialists of America, and you have people that are on college campuses saying, like, well, you know, I sort of identify as a communist. It's like, all right, well, if you want to LARP and role play this communism fantasy that you have, first things first. Starve yourself for a week in order to, you know, get in character a little bit more. And then let's talk. Because that's the first thing you're going to need to come to terms with, is that there will always be a lack of food. It isn't going to be piled up in your warehouse. You're going to be eating crickets if you can find them. So I'll spare you the excruciating journey towards realization of this, and I'll just put it in a podcast episode so that you don't have to do all of that. But that's what we're going to do. We'll start with this. We'll get into kind of the backstory of, like, what is the Communist Manifesto? Why is it still a thing? Who's talking about it? And how it plays into sort of today's society. So it was written in 1848. So we are, you know, a little less than, you know, 200 years ago. This was written by Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels. It was 10 key steps towards creating a dictatorship of the proletariat. That's what
They said that's what they wanted. They wanted they were sort of tired of a dictatorship of the few and controlling the many. So what they decided was they're like, well, let's just have it so that we create a dictatorship of the many. So we'll have all the many be in charge of what we do. And what could possibly go wrong with that, right? I mean, how many times have you gone, you got six people and you're all trying to figure out where you want to go for dinner? You know what I mean? Just think about that. But now, I don't know, scale up to 50 million people. We need a consensus. Excuse me, we're not going anywhere until somebody tells me, are we going? We're not going to Long John Silver's. I'm just telling you that right now. Nobody's ever gone to Long John. You want to talk about a money laundering operation. Somebody is going to need to prove to me that Mattress Firm and Long John Silver's are not two elaborate money laundering operations. I know I got a bit distracted there, but it happens. Here's the problem with this idea that there's going to be a dictatorship of the proletariat. The proles always end up getting killed in the end. That's the problem, right? Instead of listening to the ideas that all these people have, the dictatorship of the instead they just said, you guys all, you know, this governing thing would be way easier if you guys just weren't here. So instead of having a dictatorship of the working class, we're just still going to do a dictatorship of the people at the top. It's just that instead of, in this version, we'll just murder all the working class. I mean, as many as we can, and that'll show them. I mean, we're not trying to murder the working class. We're trying to murder the predator class at the top. But that's the thing about communism, is that you have ideas about how this is going to go. We'll murder all the people at the top. You know, Khmer Rouge, Cambodia, mid-70s, right? We'll murder everybody who's in charge, who's the working class and who's a scientific class, the doctors, the lawyers, the bankers, the accountants, anybody smart. We'll murder all of them first because they're clearly the problem. And then what happened in Cambodia was that they ran out of people to murder and they didn't know who else to kill. So they just murdered people that were wearing glasses because they look like they might be smart. So this is, again, how it ends. It devolves into this. And in the case of Cambodia, 25% of your population ends up dead. And it can happen this way. And if it happened, if for some reason they decided they were going to try a soft form of communism inside the United States, and by the way, a case can be made that it is already in play, just know that the ending will be bloody, because it always is. It's just part of the equation. Communism was never about freeing people. It's about enslaving people. But the slaves never figure that out. They think they're the heroes in the story. They don't understand that they don't make it to the end of it. They don't make it to the end of the story. They're put up against the wall. Hitler had Mein Kampf, his book, right? Mao had his book, The Little Red Book, to use as the blueprint and justification for impending massacres. Where do you think they got that idea from? From the Communist Manifesto. They got the idea from Karl Marx. But this is what communists seek to do. This is what they think. And I just think of it like through the lens of the current American government led by Biden. Think about their level of competency and then extrapolate that out to a country that's doesn't have any sort of capitalistic controls at all. Let's just say that everything is fully communism. Central planning is a key component, right? What the state is going to do is what they're saying is, yeah, all you people out there, you may need something here or there. You may feel like you need a loaf of bread or a new pair of shoes, but we, the government, we know better than you. What we're going to do is we're going to plan for the entire society, all, let's just say 100 million of you, 100 million of you. We're going to plan, we're going to figure out how many shoes need to be made, and we're going to figure out how many bread loaves we need to bake, and we're going to make sure that we distribute them in a way so that everybody's got what they need. Would you be comfortable in a scenario in which the Joe Biden administration told you, as you've run out of shoes and bread, that they're going to make sure that everything gets to you on time and what you need when you need it, right? Central planning in an Amazon world. That's what the Biden administration's. Would you believe them? I don't think so. So the goal of modern communists is to do a better job running a million Amazon warehouses than the free market. Good luck. Good luck. The American government would like, think of a million Amazon warehouses spread out throughout America.
With Amazon running them, right?
They're pretty good at what they do. We can say what we want about Jeff Bezos and his history and all of that. But as a company, when you order something on Amazon, you get it. It gets to you. It goes through the
supply chain.
Their distribution system is, they will write books if they haven't already about the supply chain that Amazon has built. It's truly remarkable. The American government says, yeah. Kamala Harris says, I know that you have been working on this project for 30 years, but it's time for you to be unburdened by it. I am going to come in here and show you how it's done. I'm going to make sure that you get that razor that you just ordered. I'm going to make sure that you get the newest copy of the Octopus of Global Control that you can get on Amazon or in the audiobook form. Kamala Harris is going to re-record the audio. It's going to be her voice. The Octopus of Global Control. I'm sorry to inform Graham Dunlop that I've taken him off as the voice of the Octopus of Global Control, because in a Kamala Harris communist world, she'll just do all the voices for it. It'll be fine. Or we'll just have somebody read a book and record it that's sort of like the book that I wrote. And then that could be the audiobook. And it's good enough. And it's close enough, comrade. I mean, this is what we're talking about. So again, it's preposterous when you look at it this way. When you just talk about, I mean, not take all the banking, all the bloodshed, all the wars, all the defense, all that aside, just from the logistic side of things, the American government would be so incompetent at getting anything done. You would half of the population would be dead in 30 days, but from starvation. I assure you, they're just, you know. Because, like, what is in the Kamala Harris communist utopia, what are you planning on paying your logistics and supply chain chief in? Rotten bananas? Like they do in Cuba? What are you going to pay this genius who's come in and done what Jeff Bezos and his crew couldn't do for 30 years, even though they've been doing it pretty well? You're going to come in and reimagine transportation? Oh, I can't wait. So the 10 planks of communism are designed not just as these are the things that we should be doing, but it's also sort of a litmus test as well, because what you do is you see if you are currently, if on those the list of 10, and we're going to get to them in a minute here, on the list of 10, if you are currently experiencing any of those things, then if you have any of these symptoms, contact your doctor. You may be experiencing communism. See what sort of vaccines are right for you. Right, but that's the thing, is if you have all 10 of them, you're a commie, whether you want to admit it or not. You just are. By definition, you've checked off all the boxes on the checklist, so you're a communist. Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote two books before the Communist Manifesto came out in 1948. They wrote a book called The Holy Family They wrote a book called The Holy Family in 1845, and they wrote one called The German Ideology in 1846. They're both Germans. There are Germans who eventually wound up moving to Belgium and living like down the street from each other. They would just write books and pontificate about dumb ideas, I suppose. But Frederick Engels doesn't get the credit that Marx does. They were similar. They were best friends with similar views. I mean, it wasn't a stretch. They would read each other's books. You know, like, hey, I've been working on this. You know, why don't you look what I've read and or what I've written so far and see if this works with you. And so they were collaborators for a long time on books. And Frederick Engels died in 1895. That was 12 years after Karl Marx died. And what he wound up doing is he finished some of Karl Marx's works too. I mean, they basically shared the same brain, so they felt similarly about everything. And in the aftermath, that this is the foundation of which communism was sort of built upon. Now, they didn't invent communism. Right? Let me be clear. But they're obviously known for popularizing it. Homosexuality was criminalized in their utopias, so it is interesting to watch the limp-wristed left support Marxism and communism this way. It's the socialists of the left who are gay never understood that the National Socialists, the Nazis. You know, they're you know how they're always called, everybody's a Nazi, everybody's a Nazi. Well, Nazi stands for National Socialists. And what they didn't, what they don't understand is that the, you know, they're like, oh, we're socialists, we're supporting, you know, all the lefties now in Portland and in San Francisco and Seattle, and they're talking about how they're socialists and everything, and they're all trans and everything's like, you don't understand. You would have been institutionalized immediately in any other, if you lived in a socialist country. Do you remember a couple of years ago, do you know who John Galliano is? He used to be the head of design for Dior. I don't know why I know this, but I do. And he looks like a little gay pirate, right? A little thin mustache, and he looks like Prince, but not like a cool version of Prince, like a gay pirate version of Prince, right? And so he got all fucked up one night, one afternoon, I guess, in a restaurant in Paris with his buddy, and he started getting into it with some fat woman in the restaurant, right? And I guess his son caught it on video. He wound up losing his job over this, but he was telling this fat chick that he wished Adolf Hitler would come back so that he could stuff her into an oven, her fatness into an oven. But here's the irony that John Galliano would never understand, is that if Adolf Hitler came back, he'd be stuffed with his little faggy pirate mustache. He'd be the first one stuffed in the oven. That's what they fail to understand. They're out here pointing at everybody that needs to be rounded up. What they don't get is that they will be rounded up at some point. Because nobody likes a collaborator. Nobody likes anybody that collaborates with the enemy, right? And so, again, and I think this is probably worth mentioning, since Karl Marx kind of, they go hard in the paint against everybody. But Karl Marx comes from a Jewish family. Changed their names. Changed their identity. Lived in Germany. Now all of a sudden he's against the Jews, right? He's against all of that stuff. But I have questions, because there's a lot of history of Jewish families changing their names, changing their religion, becoming Protestants, wink, wink, becoming Catholic, becoming whatever. So I don't trust Karl Marx when they say, well, his family was Jewish, but his family didn't want to be Jewish, and they changed and changed this and changed that. Well, there's always a lot of changing going on, but that's surface level. I don't think the changes were actually made. Let's get into the 10 plank, shall we? I assure you. They're like, it's just a recipe. It's just one long bad idea by people who don't really understand how it's actually going to work. I mean, it's not even a case where it sounds good on paper and then the execution is bad. Or, well, this could work if only you had the right people, or only you had the right attitude, or it was the right timing, or maybe you were in a good economic time, maybe you were in a really bad economic. There is no scenario in which communism comes in and saves the day. It doesn't work that way. The people that advocate for communism are stupid, or evil, or both. But you can't live your life in this manner, in reality, and hope to thrive. This is not our boat sank off the coast of an island and 100 of us washed up on this remote island and decided to build a society out of that, where we all decided that we weren't going to have money and we were going to divvy up the responsibility. It's not that. That breaks down after 250 to 300 people. Sociologists have shown that. That the idea that you can live in small tribes in this, with this mentality, with this idea, this ideology of abolition of inheritance and things. I mean, whatever. You could live in a small society and maybe make it work, but not on the scale that we're talking about, not in modern society at all. So let's start. Number one, the abolition of property in land and application of all rents of land to public purpose. You'll own nothing. Number two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. I'm already against it, period. I was against it on number one, for the record. Number three, abolition of all rights of inheritance. This is the trick question. You're not going to have anything to inherit. Yeah, we're getting rid of all the rights of inheritance from now on in our communist paradise. You won't be able to inherit all of this stuff from your parents. Why? Because the rules have changed? Kind of. Also because your parents don't have stuff and they starved to death a decade ago. Number four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. First of all,
define rebel.
Second of all, did we confiscate the property? We're definitely doing it wrong here in the United States. You said confiscate the property of all immigrants. I thought you said give immigrants everything they want plus a hotel room in New York City for 6 months. My mistake. I must have misread this. Number five, centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. So fiat currency in a central bank, got it.
Not a good idea.
Oh, you say you used to be Jewish, but you want the central bank? I have questions about the used to be part, okay? Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. Great. The state will be in charge of all communication. I wonder if that's what Hillary Clinton means when she's talking about us losing control of the narrative. I wonder if that's what John Kerry means when he's talking about us losing control of the narrative. I wonder if that's what Kathleen Kami Kamala means when she's talking about how we need to centralize control of social media into the hands of the government. I wonder if that came from a magic book. I know Kamala didn't come up with the idea herself. She doesn't have a functioning brain. But even if it is Communist Manifesto, it does require a tiny bit of intellectual horsepower. Number seven, extension of factories and instruments of productions owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands, and the improvement of the soil, generally in accordance with a common plan. Okay, here's what happened with the Bolshevik Revolution. They seized the means of production from the factory management, the industrial management, all of the companies that make things. They went in and got into those buildings and they took all the upper management out and they shot them all and they said, these are our companies now. These are our buildings now. These are our production facilities now. And then they asked the question, how do we run them? And the answer is, well, everybody that knows how to run them, you just shot. So now you go figure out how to run them, dummy, with your second grade education. I don't know how to run this. In the Bolshevik Revolution, what did they do? They invited the Americans back in. They had the Americans come in and run the factories because they didn't know how to run them. Because they're stupid commies that whose strategy is ready, fire, aim. That's the problem with all of this. It's a dumb playbook to begin with. But on top of that, one of the common denominators, especially with the Bolshevik Revolution, was that 70% of the people couldn't read. They were uneducated peasant farmers. They're unqualified to be in charge of the management of such facilities. They're just unqualified. But in this delusional fantasy land where everybody has the same skill set as everybody else and everybody is a cog that can just be plugged in, we can pull the management out, shoot them, and then put five new people in management and everything will run perfectly. Except that the problem is the five new people don't know anything. So that's where it all falls off. Number eight, equal liability of all to labor, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. All right, so we are going to destroy the current working system and we're going to replace it by forced labor armies of people out there collecting food, managing the agriculture. Armies, establishment of industrial armies. We have that. We have working class people that get up every morning and go to work with their lunch pail. You don't need to reinvent the wheel here. You know what you could do instead is you could pay those people. Maybe like if the people you pay more for people that worked harder. I don't know. That's just an idea. Number nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. Okay, we're going to blend agriculture with manufacturing industries. We've already done that. No need to reinvent the farming industry. It exists. And then gradually abolish the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population. So are we moving people around in large numbers? Because every time you move large groups of people around to be resettled in the East or whatnot, to be taken to labor camps, to be put on trains and resettled elsewhere, you always wind up murdering most of those people. So I'm just interested in this part about the equitable distribution of the population all over the country. I mean, so in America, are we just going to sprinkle, what, a million people in the middle of the Texas desert? Like, how equitable is this distribution, and what is the purpose of the distribution? Do you just want people everywhere? Is there a reason for it? I'm going to have to give this a D minus. We're only on number 9. Number 10, fine, the last one. I mean, this is free education for all children in public schools, abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, combination of education with industrial production. Okay, so they want you in government schools that they control so that they can propagandize your children and create little status out of them. That's what they want. And they say, well, we're going to abolish the children's factory labor in its present form. Just in its present form. It's coming back in a new form, but we're going to get rid of it in its present form. In its present form, the children are paid. In its new form, the children are worked to death in camps and then thrown off the cliff when they're done, or buried into a mine filled with lithium that they're in there, or cobalt, or whatever they're in there mining. You know, they have little hands. They're little kids. You can fit them in little holes and get all that cobalt out, right? So that these are the 10 planks, right? Abolition of property and land and application of all rents of land and public purpose. Number 2, a heavy progressive income tax. Number 3, abolition of all rights of inheritance. Number 4, confiscation of property of immigrants and rebels. Number 5, centralization of credit in the hands of the state through a central bank. 6, centralization of the means of communication. 7, extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, bringing cultivation of wastelands. Oh, they're going to be in charge of the soil. Number 8, equal liability of all to labor. Everybody's working. Everybody's got to get a job. Hey, you are good at, I was a musician. I'm great at writing music. Well, get ready to start picking carrots. So number nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries and a gradual distribution of people all over the country. And last but not least, free education for children so that we can convince them that communism is good. So those are the 10. And I think that when you hear these, you go, well, I mean, some of these are just idiotic on their face. True. And some of them are just diabolical in reality, right? When you start to hear about things like centralization of credit in the hands of the state, nobody has been responsible for the death of more people in the 20th century than central bankers through their policies of extending and reducing credit, creating bubbles and fiat currencies. Fiat's fake. It's the head of the snake, as Tony Arterburn will tell you. And it is one of the most dangerous components of this. And of course, it is one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Of course, because this fantasy doesn't work without a central bank. And what is one of the most destructive forces in the world? Central banking. So you know that they have to go well together. Karl Marx thought that the proletariat working class would liberate society. You know, he was like, they're going to liberate society. We're down with capitalism, down with capitalism. And they kept pitching this to everyone, down with capitalism. Except here's the thing, Marx and Engels lived off the royalties of their books. So the hypocrisy is never far away with these stupid collectivist ideologies. It's always there somewhere. You can find the hypocrisy just right underneath the circle. Let's end all this capitalism. Well, then we'll end all the money that you guys get. Yeah, let's just, all those books you wrote, you guys should have to print them and give them away for free. Well, hang on a second. I mean, we invested a lot of time and energy in these books. We should be allowed to sell them. Absolutely you should. As an author myself of 3 books, just like Karl Marx, I can tell you that it does take a lot of time and energy to write books. It takes a ton. And you don't do it for free. And you don't, but again, in this, you know, you're not also not doing it to get rich. But there has to be some sort of compensation for your time and effort. Because again, if anybody could write the Communist Manifesto, why didn't they? I mean, according to their magic book, everybody is equal and everybody is able and everybody can just snap into place and do whatever. So why couldn't somebody else write the Communist Manifesto? Because they didn't have the idea and they didn't sit down and take the time to do it. And they don't have an understanding of the mechanics of this. And they don't have the typewriter, and they don't have the paper, and they don't have the this, and they don't have that. And these guys actually took it upon themselves, Karl Marx, took it upon himself to go to work and invest his time and energy with his buddy and write a book about what they thought. And then they put it out and decided to sell it, and they sold the book. And the irony of ironies is that Karl Marx is talking about the abolition of private property while selling books and collecting royalties. It is automatic disqualification for his ideas because his book's existence in and of itself violates the 10 planks of Communist Manifesto. So what are we doing? Let's talk a little bit about communist justice. Have you heard of this? During the Cultural Revolution in China and the Soviets of the USSR, they put in place something called a two-tiered legal system. And I invite you to listen to the next part of this just through the lens of what's going on in a place like San Francisco, where they've decriminalized certain things. This is what they set up in these communist states. They intentionally set up two types of justice systems, and they wanted you to notice it too. It wasn't that this was hidden. Maybe at first they do what they do now and they say, yo, we're just trying to make up for some previous inequalities or mistakes were made, or, oh, it's not really what you think it is or whatever. But at some point, it's obvious that there are two tiers of justice in these communist systems, and you noticing that is necessary. It's not accidental that you notice that there's two tiers, and it's not like, oh shit, we forgot to fix this and there should only be one tier. There's intentionally two tiers, and it's intentional that you recognize that there's two types of justice. Prosecute law-abiding citizens. This is what they would do. They would prosecute law-abiding citizens because they do not move the revolution forward. You're not doing anything. You're out here doing what the law says, what the law asks you to do. You're out here being a good person. You're sort of minding your own business. We can't have that. How are we going to have this glorious revolution for our dear leader if you're sitting there following all the rules? So we have to murder you, right? We have to murder everybody. So that's what they did. So they would purge these people. This idea that, like, oh, the communists come to power and they purge all the bad people. They purge all the good people. That's the point. They purge all the people that were minding their own business, following the laws and staying out of trouble. They purge those people not because they're bad, but because they're good. And because they're good, they're not participating in the revolution. And if you're not participating in the revolution, then get the fuck off this planet and get up against the wall so we can shoot you and put you in a hole. So that's what's going on in the Soviet Union and in Mao's China. The good people are getting rounded up and shot, and everybody sees this. Then the second component of it is this: protect the low-level criminals because they do move the revolution forward, right? Of course. Of course, these low-level criminals who you protect will eventually be put up against the wall themselves. But they don't know that. They're low-level criminals. They're the Antifas of this, or the brown shirts. They're the dummies that are never going to figure it out until it's too late. Until they're in a boxcar being resettled, or they're up against the wall saying, "What is this? I thought I was going to be an artist in this great empire." And they're like, "Oh no, no, no! You're going to be dead in this great empire. You're useless." So this is, and that sends us obviously a very powerful message. When you see that there's two types of justice, you know, like that would be like, oh, I don't know, in our scenario, let me make up a fake, totally fictional scenario. And as an example, like it'd be like if people in Washington, D.C. were guilty of raping children, trafficking kids, organ harvesting, stealing money, giving our sworn enemy resources and all that stuff. And then the general public knew that they were guilty of all that. And then none of them went to prison. You know, it'd be like that, right? But that would never happen here. One of the things that they talk about in this communist justice scenario is that first, society must be unburdened by its past. Is that a term that rings a bell? It's the reason why Kamala keeps talking about this. Now, she's dumb. She's one of the dumber people you'll ever see on television. There's no doubt about that. But some of the language that she uses is intentional. When she talks about, you know, being unburdened, that is, it sounds like word salad. She uses it in a context that is just requiring croutons and oil and vinegar at the end, of course. But the term comes from somewhere else. The concept of being unburdened is really dark because some of it, just see, what you need to do in order to become unburdened by what has been is that you need to destroy the current culture and start over. In order to be unburdened by the past, you need to destroy it. Destroy every example of it. Destroy the remnants of it. Destroy anything that reminds you of it. Destroy the look. Destroy the art. Destroy the beauty behind it. Destroy it all. Destroy the current culture and make everything ugly. That's what they did in China. That's what they did in the Soviet Union. Destroy the current and make everything ugly. That's why you get those boring, gray, drab Soviet architecture buildings that all look like 15-story prisons, but they're apartment complexes. You get the projects. You get the projects. You've ever come in from, if you've ever driven in from JFK into Manhattan a certain way, you go by the projects and you look at all these buildings and they all look the same. They look completely devoid of any sort of architectural flair or beauty or anything. I just, every time I go into New York and I see them, I just think they look like Soviet style buildings. But think about that. Think about that with what you see with the leftists out there. I mean, look at the haircuts. Now do those chicks with the dumb haircuts make sense? And the stupid arrangement of tattoos. They've got tattoos in weird places and the shitty bang haircut. And they all look, you know, now do you understand why these people are ugly, fat, and dirty? And they are. They're ugly, fat, and dirty. It's an observation. The reason why they are, it's part of this ideology. It's to be unburdened by what has been in the past. Former beauty standards have made us feel a certain way. They made it so that Kate Moss had to smoke a bunch of cigarettes and didn't eat in the 90s, you know, because of these unrealistic beauty standards. But we're going to smash the patriarchy. We're going to be unburdened by what has been in the form of beauty. And if I want to give myself a bowl haircut and put tattoos in stupid locations all over my body, I'm going to do that because I'm the new face of beauty. And the problem with it is that corporate America through DEI has been sucked into this and is participating in it as well, which is the reason why you get Calvin Klein ads with 400-pound black women in underwear instead of skinny, beautiful Mark Wahlbergs and Kate Mosses of the world like they used to use from the minute they went into business until DEI came around. For as many years as they were in business, it was always about selling unattainable beauty. But it gave you something to aspire to. You were probably never going to look like Kate Moss or Marky Mark or whatever back in the 90s with those ads. But at least you knew they put in some time in the gym and you knew that they were a unicorn, right? There's nothing magical or special about some 400-pound person. Anybody can be that if you try hard enough. So it's part of this, though. It starts to make a little bit more sense. It's still obviously frustrating to watch this play out, but at least you go, oh, now I understand why you people are so dirty and disgusting. It's all part of the plan. It's the part of the destroying beauty norms. You know, well, mission accomplished. You know, Victoria's Secret, owned by Les Wexner, made a damn fortune off of beautiful Victoria's Secret's angels doing runway shows and magazine ads and television commercials and print ads and all that stuff. They sold billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of lingerie to women who didn't look like that, but hoped that maybe this would put them on that path towards looking like that. And they have replaced that now with fat mannequins. When you go in the store, even the mannequins are fat. Let that sink in. So again, but this two-tiered legal stuff, You see it in San Francisco with the Chesa Boudin gets into office, right? It's the anything under $951 you can steal without it being a crime. So that's a two-tiered legal system right there, right? I mean, you and I walk into a grocery store and we don't think about picking up stuff and sticking it in our backpack, but we could. In San Francisco, we absolutely could. If we wanted to participate in that, it's not illegal for us to go in there and steal $950 worth of stuff. It's illegal to steal $951 worth of stuff, but not $950. Them's the rules. So again, I want you to sort of look at this through the lens of, are we seeing soft communism in San Francisco? Because protecting low-level criminals was part of it, right? Protect low-level criminals because they move the revolution forward. Well, who's getting protected in San Francisco? Low-level criminals. You can shoot fentanyl in the park. Nobody cares. You can go into safe shooting places, right? That they've got those there too. You can be out on the street. You can be sleeping on the street. Like, there's no repercussions for that, right? So, two-tiered legal system in San Francisco has been in play for years now. And Kamala Harris was part of that. She came out of this system in the 90s through the district attorney's office, Slick Willie Brown. Now, Kamala was incompetent. She didn't do much. She said she has had problems everywhere she's gone. She had over 1,000 convictions overturned because her involvement in that system, the legal system in San Francisco, was a disaster because she's a communist. And this is what she wants. She wants a two-tiered legal system. The failures from them is part of it. Get used to it. There's more coming. Think about this. Think of it from this standpoint, in San Francisco. Drug addicts, homeless, mentally ill, unarrested. They live in perfect harmony out there on the streets. They can do whatever they want. They won't get arrested. If they do get arrested, they will be out in less than an hour. And there's examples of this where, you guys have been arrested 50 times. There's no repercussions for it. The migrants are protected. The drug addicts are protected. The homeless are protected. The mentally ill are protected. The low-level criminals are protected. This is what you do in communist societies in order to create chaos, in order to scare the shit out of the middle class. They're not going to be a middle class anymore. But you need to understand that we prefer the low-level scumbags to you, to your ilk here. We don't want you middle-class people with your ideas of working, responsibility. You guys are going to have to get out of here, right? So we'll force you out by showing you a society that is incompatible with logic and reason.
Right. And that's what they do.
And who else loved these two-tiered legal systems? How about, you ever read Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky? He came out of Chicago. He was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's sugar daddy. They loved him. I mean, Chicago politics is borderline communist, always has been. Hey, nice schools, comrade. Nice schools there in Chicago. You're doing a great job. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job of those schools. I can't wait until the communists in Chicago try to put the government grocery store plan into place. I will be following that. I will be following that. All right, so let's end with this. Here's the question that a lot of people ask. Okay, so if Karl Marx was a communist, what's a Marxist? Sound like a good question? Because these communists, Marxists, isms, they all get a little bit blurry. It's admittedly a gray area. I'll give you the best explanation I can give you with the caveat that the difference between communism and Marxism is admittedly a bit of a gray area. I mean, when Karl Marx, the founder of Marxism, is on the record saying that he's a communist, you know that the Venn diagram will interlock at some point, right? And there's quite a bit of it. But the way it's described is this: communism is a collection of ideologies focused on achieving some mythical communist society. All right, so it's a collection of ideologies. It's like, we have these ideas about this perfect society in the future. And Marxism is a philosophical and economic framework employed by communists and socialists. So it's the operating system of communism, if you want to think of it that way. It's a product of it. it really gets into the economic side of things, the framework of how we're going to make money, you know, or not make money in this particular case. But it shows how it really gets into the nitty gritty of like how we're going to deal with functioning money. Communism is like this conceptual thing. Marxism is more like granular. So they're both stupid and designed to fail due to human nature, of course. But this is it. So they both push for planned societies, planned economies. But communism focuses on getting rid of personal property and replaced with collective ownership. Communism is very much against personal property. You'll own nothing and be happy. World Economic Forum sales pitch, how I've always said, it's just a sales pitch. It's a timeshare presentation for communism. That's what it is, because when they say you'll own nothing, that's communism. You'll own nothing there too, because it's going to be replaced with collective ownership, of course. So collective ownership of the means of production, you know, like the Amish. Everyone's like, wait a second, are the Amish communists? Maybe. The Amish might be the best example of working well together, of when you get a society that's not too big, but ideologically aligned, you get the Amish. Shout out to the Amish. Not that they'll be hearing this podcast, of course. Marxists, as an example, as a sort of a differentiation between Marxists and communists. Marxists are obsessed with class struggle, but the commies think that problem is best solved by removing all classes, so that there is no class struggle because there's no class. You're just equally fucked. Classless society for commies, right? So the Marxists are so concerned with, like, you know, Mein Kampf, you know, my struggle. they're so concerned with the struggle in these classed societies. And what communism is saying is, well, you wouldn't have to worry about any sort of struggle if you didn't have classes. You're like, but there are different classes of people. Not the commies. There's only one class of people. So Marxists at least recognize that there is a little bit of differentiation between the people, and that some are a little different or maybe a little bit more qualified than others. See, the communists didn't understand this, and it might have been helpful if they had, because they would have understood that you don't shoot the brains behind the operation if you're trying to take over the operations, right? You got to understand how the system works and have them teach your guys how to do it before you shoot the boss. But again, communists are never branded as being intelligent, strategic, smart. They're piranhas. They're human piranhas that can be manipulated and sent in a direction to do your bidding. But ultimately, part of the feature of communism is that nobody gets much information about how things are actually supposed to go. And so nobody is really in the know. Nobody knows more than anybody else. So everybody's equally useless in this situation, in this scenario. It doesn't tap into human potential. It doesn't tap into sort of the magic of like motivation. Some people are better equipped. Some people want it more. Some people are you know, it dissolves all of that. All of the enthusiasm that a person may have been born with to try to go out and do something special in life just goes away, because there's no incentive for you to be special, because you won't get rewarded. In fact, truth be told, if you are special, you'll stand out as being special and they'll kill you. So, you know, it's really not the best government structure to live under. I'm an anarchist, so I oppose all government structures, but truth be told, some are better than others, and communism is clearly down at the bottom of the list. Communism is a political ideology, right? It's the way you feel about how the political structure should be run. Classless, stateless, moneyless. That's what commies want. It's just unrealistic. It's a society through collective ownership,
you know?
Again, like if you've ever worked on a school project, when the teacher's like, all right, we're going to put you six together and you six and you, and you have to get together and work on a project, inevitably there's some one or two people that just doesn't do much. They don't pull their weight. They sort of defer to the rest. Extrapolate that and you know, now instead of six people in your group, now you've got 60 million. How many of those people are going to do nothing? A lot. And then how many of the people who would have been qualified to do not just something, but more than something, how many of those people are going to look around saying, okay, they're going to make an internal calculation. If I do what I can do and make things better for this group, why? Where's my incentive? I'm going to make it better for the guy that never works. Why? I'm going to make it better for the other people in my group that never do anything. Why? I make it better for me. I have an interest in making it better for me because I can. I'll do that. You're not allowed to. All right, well, then I won't do it. So you see, it just sucks all the motivation and any sort of drive and ambition out of the entire society.
Right.
It's not a winning strategy. Marxists think that socialism is the bridge that will best get society from capitalistic, where we are, to communistic, the easiest. They say if you want to go from a capitalist society to a communist society, you can't do it all at once. It's too big of a change. What you have to do is you have to become socialist first. Once you become a socialist, the change from capitalist to socialist is manageable. The change from capitalist to communist is not. So they say, first things first, what you want to do is you want to become a socialist. And then once you're a socialist, the move from socialist to communist is natural after that, right? So they think that that's easiest. So the transitory step from capitalism to communism is called socialism, right? That's how you get from one place to the other. That's the thing. So the socialism motto is from each according to his ability to each according to his labor. Communist motto is very similar, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. Okay. So in socialism, they're still talking about working. In communism, they're just talking about needs. What are your needs? Well, I need everybody to start working. That's my needs. Because if nobody's working and nobody has an interest in working, all the things that I need, you know, my needs that you say you're going to meet, they're not going to be met because nobody's working. Get it? You have to create a structure in which there is some form of incentivization for people to get up in the morning and do something. Now, going off and trading your energy in for fiat currency ain't the answer, I'll tell you that. But there are solutions that are within this, okay? But the idea that you're just going to wake up and the state is going to provide for you, well, think about all the things that the state provides for you. Government cheese, the DMV, public schools. Are they high quality or low quality? Would you consider the DMV to be a fantastic experience or not? Would you consider public schools to prepare you for the outside world or to make you a low-functioning robot? What do you think? So when the government provides for you, you get the bare minimum. And if your entire life's strategy is to sit around waiting for a handout from the government, then you get what you deserve, which is low quality everything. And I don't want to hear any complaining because the rest of us got up and did something about it. But it wouldn't matter if you lived in a communist society. I could wake up in the morning with the best attitude, ready to do all this stuff and only for it to not matter. Socialism, communism is plain pretend. You pretend to work, and the government pretends to pay you,
right?
You pretend to do the things, and the government pretends to give you all the things that they need. They say they're going to meet your needs. Well, you go and do your work, air quotes work, and we will give you the things that you need, air quotes need, right?
That's it.
So these concepts of socialism and Marxism and communism sound, you know, like good ideas to lazy, stupid people, but they break down once the society hits a certain number of people. Anything over 250 people, you start to lose that cohesion, becomes a problem. You know, 250 people, 250 million, multiply that number by a million. That's the United States of America. Doesn't look good for us. Hey, everybody, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can connect with me through the website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.